Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Very interesting. Ah, the Grinch who stole Christmas. Well, here are a few more places we can be thankful for in St. Louis. For example, the Mercantile Library and Art Museum, now at UMSL. It's been around since 1846, another 19th century place. The Anheuser-Busch Brewery, especially now with the Christmas lights in Soulard, and another 19th century place, Henry Shaw's Missouri Botanical Garden. His Tower Grove House, the Climatron, there's so much there to see. And we have to talk not from the 19th century, but the State Historical Society of Missouri of today and the director here of that organization, A.J. Medlock, taking a little time out of what are you taking time away from to be on the radio for? What are you doing today?
Oh, I'm just hanging out at home. We're going to eat in about 30 minutes.
Oh, my
nothing
gosh.
Too big.
Early dinner.
That's how we roll around the Medlock House.
Have you been working on the dinner yourself? Have you done, or are you just an observer?
I've cleaned the dishes.
Well, that's a big job.
My wife is afraid of me lighting up the oven, so I stay away.
Are you going to have turkey?
No, we're going to have some corn casserole and salad. It's going to be a light Thanksgiving dinner.
Sound like a vegetarian dinner?
Just a bit, yeah.
Well,
I think my wife converted me.
Well, good. Nothing wrong with any of that. We're having lemon pasta today.
Ooh, yummy.
Yeah, I've nice. Oh, boy. That's one of my favorite dishes, too. Well, A.J. Medlock, State Historical Society of Missouri, not to be confused with the Missouri Historical Society. And a lot of people do confuse you two together.
Yeah, once in a while. It's fine. Now, the names are, you know, so similar. Our missions are so similar. But, you know, just... it's all good. Both great institutions.
Well, one of the things I was talking about you when I did this program for Oasis this week in Lost St. Louis, I showed some pictures of Gaslight Square, which came from your collection. Especially, we had several of them and always draw some laughs of Sergei, the little kid that was in so many pictures of Gaslight Square. So how many pictures of Gaslight Square do you think you have in your archive?
God, it's hard to say because we most of them come from the Arthur Whitman papers, and he was a photographer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And I think he about snapped every major event that happened from the 30s to the 70s. I'd say maybe, well over 100 at least, maybe more.
I'll bet more than that.
Yeah, it's a conservative estimate on my part.
Yeah, I would think very conservative. More of like 1,000 pictures are there. How do people, what do they do? Do they come to see you at your offices there at UMSL? And you have branches elsewhere, not just St. Louis. So how do they do
we have headquarters in Columbia and then research centers across the state. At the St. Louis Research Center, all over the State Historical Society, we have a lot of our photographs digitized. Mm-hmm. Most of the Whitman papers are, these photographs are digitized online, especially at Gaslight Square. But if you would want to come in to look at them in person, you know, we're open for Tuesdays through Fridays from 8:30 to 4:30. You just give us a call or contact us, make an appointment. We're on the second floor of the Thomas Jefferson Library. More free to come in to look at them. At the University of Missouri, St. Louis, you're more than free to come in and look at them if you just give us a heads up about when you plan on coming.
Sure. Now, what about looking at it online? Where do you have to go?
Yeah, it's going to be at shsmo.org. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be like a manuscripts tab, and you'll see digital. And that'll be the link to our, I'll have links to our digitized collections.
Great. SHSMO.org, SHSMO.org. And then if you want to get the digital thing on there, take a look. But come and talk to the people that are there. Zach is there with you. Now, this is not a big staff of people here. This is not a huge operation.
Well, I think overall, the society, it is overall pretty big, but, you know, we're divided up in a research center. So there's my colleague, Zach Kalich, there's Courtney Gilley. They are the grant archivists for the our Congressional Papers Project. They're working on the William Hungate papers, who was congressman in the area and one of the judges who oversaw the desegregation of St. Louis schools. We have Mike McHugh, who's our part-time archivist. And then Dr. Danielle Grego is also, they are the education coordinator for SHSMO, and they are based out of our St. Louis office.
Oh, that's terrific. So it's getting bigger and bigger all the time, it seems to me. Yeah. How many people come to see you in your offices every year, would you say?
Well, for the fiscal year of last year, I think it was about close to 800. We're steadily building up our patron base. We work pretty closely with UMSL classes and WashU classes. We're trying to expand our user base, but I'm thinking this year we may get around to 900. We just had well over 100 in both September and October, which is pretty good for a strictly archival shop.
It sure is.
Obviously, museums would be bigger. Obviously, museums, there's more visitors, but just for a pure manuscripts library, that's pretty good.
Now, you're talking about the Hungate papers and the Arthur Whitman collection. If somebody has something to donate, to put in your collection, what are you looking for? What do you want or what don't you want?
Well, for 20th century materials, we usually, especially if like family and personal papers or organizational records, we usually look for like meeting minutes, photographs, correspondence, diaries, things of that nature. Like, for example, we just took in the Optimists International Records. They have an office. They have offices on Lindell Boulevard. They've been around since 1919, so they gave us all their original convention meeting minutes, their board meeting minutes, their files from their publicity department, including photographs. We have all their files of their disbanded clubs across the United States and the world. So those kinds of things we usually look for. We don't usually want or canceled checks or usually not newspaper clippings unless they're part of a larger collection. Usually we don't have we tend to shy away from three-dimensional objects once again it's part of a larger collection. Like, for example, Optimist International has a ton of unique buttons from all their previous conventions and clubs, so we make an exception for that. It helps the researcher understand the larger organization.
Sure. Now, I passed that building today, a mid-century modern building, or two buildings are connected, the original one, two-story, and then the other one is a little larger. And that's, I understand, is going to be made into a hotel. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I've talked to their executive director, Cheryl Brand. That was what I heard, was that it was going to be a hotel. I don't know where that their negotiations are right now, but when I first broached them about this, they were worried about, because they're moving to a smaller space, so they needed somewhere and they didn't know what to do with all these historical files, so I came at the right time. But I do believe it's going to be a hotel.
Well, it's saving history. That's what it's all about at the State Historical Society of Missouri. And it's not just saving them for themselves. They're saving it for everybody, so everybody can come and look. And where did they have the branches? There's one in Rolla, Columbia?
Yeah, also in Kansas City, Springfield, and Cape Girardeau, all on university campuses.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any special events that you do here? I know I see your emails that come. There's something on Elm Street all the time in Columbia. But do you do anything here, the outreach things?
Yeah, we usually, the biggest part's working in class is I go out to make presentations to different organizations. I think I just made a presentation to the Chapel of the Cross near Blackjack, Missouri. Just give him just a presentation on preserving personal and family papers. For the last couple of years, especially with COVID, we haven't been able to do too much programming. But the next couple of years, we're going to try to ramp up our programming locally. We also, Dr. Grego also oversees National History Day in Missouri. So I, through her, I do a lot of, I work with National History Day students as well.
So thank you. And I know your wife is very anxious for you to get over there because it's time for dinner.
Yeah, incidentally, Dr. Grego is also my wife, so it's really, I am, one of the things I'm thankful for is getting to work with her every day.
That's wonderful. That's great. Well, thank you, A.J. Medlock. We appreciate your calling us. Thank you again. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you. Yeah, hope to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
A.J. Medlock, State Historical Society, Missouri, a name you hear all the time on KMOX. I called her last night. I thought that she'd be at home, but she wasn't. She was working last night right here. Maria Kina. We'll talk about her, her career, her background, what she does, what she used to do, what she likes to do. And then we're going to talk about food in a little bit with Suzanne Corbett. Tom Dunn will tell us the story of the Admiral and more. All of this on our Johnny Rabbit Thanksgiving Day program on KMOX 1120. This is Johnny Rabbit with the Thanksgiving program on KMOX, a special day. I'll be back on New Year's Day from 10 to 1 doing another special show. And speaking of special, here's Maria Kina. I bet you, Maria, have you ever, you have done that song before, performed Santa Baby, I would imagine.
Eartha Kitt, yes, the original one.
Yep. You do those things, you do. Do you still do a lot of singing?
We still have the big band, 16-piece big band.
Well, tell me about the big band.
Well, it's a great musicians, wonderful group. We have guys and gals, real diverse as far as age, so it's nice that we've acquired some young people along the way. And we do a lot of private stuff, not so much public stuff. We do have a public gig coming up on December the 22nd at the Pacific Opera House. But things got a little slow, certainly with the pandemic. It's been a little slow coming back.
I bet.
So, but it's, you know, it's not even like work. You get out there and you set it all up, and it's just once you get up there and start playing, it's just... It's like you step back in time, and it's really fun.
Oh, that's great. What is the name of the band?
It's the Knights of Swing.
And who was, are you the director now?
Yes, I am.
And who did you replace?
Dr. Warren Butts. It was his band, and he unfortunately passed away back in 2016, and he wanted the band to carry on. So I went ahead and kept it going.
Oh, good for you. That's a big undertaking to get all these people together. Where do you do your rehearsals?
We do it in my basement in the house. We're kind of like sardines down there sometimes. But and some of the guys in the band call it, you know, it's like herding cats, keeping everybody together. So, but it's fun. It's
terrific.
A lot of personalities, but it's great. Yeah.
Well, you did a nice job for us a few years ago at the Four Seasons Hotel. I was doing a program. I don't even know what it was about anymore. Highways in St. Louis for the Missouri State Highway Commission or something at the Four Seasons. And there we had you singing Route 66.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah. I do remember that. Yeah.
So now most people say, okay, now she's on the radio. She's a singer. You never sing on KMOX, do you, or have you?
No, I don't want to sing on KMOX.
Oh, darn it. So when are you here in the newsroom? What are your days of operation here?
I work Monday through Friday, and I'm on 2 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the evening anchor now.
Yes. Well, good. That's great. I hear you all the time, and it's terrific. But you've done a lot of other radio. You did jazz shows, I believe.
I did. I did a couple music stations, 1380, KZJZ. Was over at WSIE for a while. Did a gig over there and actually started my musical DJing at WEW, which is a very historic station here, 770 AM in St. Louis.
Yeah.
So that was back in the 90s when I first got into radio.
Now, what kind of music? That was when they were playing big bands and that type of stuff on that station?
It was a big band station. And I always learned a love for the music from my mom because it always played in the house. But boy, when I went to work at that station, that really solidified it then, playing the music every day. Because I could play whatever I want.
Right,
and it was just, oh my gosh, there was so much of it. And it was like being in a candy factory.
Now, do you have a lot of recordings of yourself as far as being on the air? Did you air checks and so on that you've kept?
No, I hate to listen to myself. I hate to hear myself on the air.
I understand. I know the feeling very well.
Isn't it weird? I mean, we like being on the air, but we don't want to hear ourselves.
Yeah, it's true. So true.
Yeah.
So what about news? How did you get into the news business from being a jazz DJ?
Well, actually, that was what I went to school for was journalism.
Where did you go to school? Where were you at school?
I went to St. Louis University, and also I went through the Broadcast Center And then what happened with the broadcast center, I didn't quite complete the program, and KXOK started in an all-news format. And I applied for a weekend editor's job there. And he said, well, I need a reporter and a weekend news anchor worse. So he said, let's try that. So I did, and boy, I wasn't ready for that. But I pulled it through. I pulled it off. And so that's how it started. And so I was really fortunate to stay and start and stay in St. Louis my whole career.
So you're from St. Louis, too, aren't you?
Born and raised, yes.
Where'd you go? I got to ask the question about high school.
Of course, you know it, Bishop DeBerg.
Yep. I see it every day.
Yes.
Was Bob Cuban there teaching when you were there?
No, I don't think so. Oh. I don't think so.
Now, as far as getting news, what happens? How do you go after these stories? Do you have certain assignments every day that you're supposed to do this, that, or do you come up with stories on your own?
Well, both. Depending on what kind of a news day you're having, we're kind of all general assignment reporters. Mm-hmm. So if you have a press conference, like this week we had a lot going on with the tragic story of that young man who died.
Yeah, terrible.
That was shot on 55. So a lot of different things going on with that, different angles to that story. But yes, we enterprise our own stories as well.
That's
so
interesting.
It's
very good.
I remember John Butler, our previous news director, said, you'd say, well, it's a slow news day, John. And he'd say, there's no such thing as a slow news day. There's only slow reporters.
yes. You run across a lot of good, interesting characters when you're in radio.
You certainly do. Boy, that's for sure.
But you don't see too many people at night. You're here at night. Well, you know, you're here in the afternoon, so there's still a lot of activity.
Yeah, there's still a lot going on. So, yeah, so that way I can come in and still see everybody and if you know, need be, go out and cover stories during the day, too. So right. That's still fun to do because I like to do that.
Now, the Knights of Swing, the big band, 16-piece big band. You're going to be the 22nd of December at where?
The Opera House of the Pacific Opera House, which is out in Pacific, Missouri. This place is really, really cool. I would thought that you might have known about it, Johnny.
I do know about it, but never been there, though.
You know it? It's a really cool little place, and it goes all the way back to, like, way, way back to the 20s.
Oh.
When you go into, like, some of the side rooms, which would have been, like, the green rooms, you could see where people wrote, like, they were there for their prom in, like, 1930.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have a piano in there that Truman played.
Oh, my goodness.
When he came through. And it's right by the railroad tracks. And mm-hmm. So a lot of history in the facility. And it, everything there is original. And they had it. What's really interesting about it is Bill McHugh and the Dailies own it. And they've had it in the family all these years. And they had all of the a lot of the acoustics and a lot of the ceiling tiles that you see, they had those brought in on a train from the things that they had at the World's Fair.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's a lot of history in that building.
Well,
a lot
thank you. I know it's going to be a good day. I hope I can make it there. That would be great to see you.
I hope so. Yeah, I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know, Maria. We'll see each other soon, I hope.
All right, you take care of yourself and have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving.
And same to you. Johnny Rabbit and KMOX. Thank you, Chuck Berry. Now we offer more places that you can be thankful for. We all can. Powell Hall and the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra will be back at home there in a not too distant future. The Del Mar Loop, it is beautifully decorated for Christmas. And Ted Drew's Frozen Custard and Christmas Tree, home of the Johnny Rabbit Chocolate Covered Cherry Concrete. I must get that in. Here's a food fan for sure. Let's Talk Turkey with Suzanne Corbett. Welcome, Suzanne. Glad you're here.
Rabbit, I'm glad to be here. Hey, is your turkey roasting already?
No turkey. We're having lemon pasta.
Okay, well, I've got a turkey in my oven right now, and it happens to be a Heritage Black turkey. And boy, those are great turkeys. They're developed from the wild Native American turkey. And if you want to eat like a pilgrim, you want to get one of these birds.
No,
they're fantastic.
Where do you get such? I've never heard of that turkey before. Where do you get it?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it is a heritage bird that is available locally at Kern Meat. You can buy them online. They've got an online store. And there is a turkey that is produced by a producer by the name of Joyce Farms. And they specialize in those heritage breed turkeys, and there's nothing like them.
You're making nothing me hungry. Like
that's my job. That is my job.
And what kind of, do you use a stuffing or a dressing?
Well, I do dressing because I've kind of got a southern bent. You know, there's a difference between dressing and stuffing.
Right.
You know, you've got stuffing that is more of a northern kind of a thing, mm-hmm. and southern is more of a stuffing. Dressing is more of a southern thing, mm-hmm. and I can't make up my mind on what kind of dressings, aka stuffing, that I want to use. So I usually make two or three just to make sure that everybody's happy or they go away mad.
That's great. Now, how many people are coming to this dinner?
12.
Oh, my goodness. That's big. When are you going to do it? What time?
4 o'clock. So come on over. There's always an extra plate.
Good. Well, you better get back to work.
There's always an extra plate.
Thank you for taking the time to do this. I had no idea you were doing. That's a lot of work.
Oh, I pretty well got it nailed now. My son comes by. I'll make sure he does the dishes.
Oh, good.
So I'll be all rested up so I can hit the road running tomorrow and hit some of those great pop-up places that Santa's going to be, where you can sip with Santa, like at Santa's sleigh shed over at Union Station, uh-huh. and the rooftop bar that's over at 360, both downtown. And at 360, they've got some really great places that you can sip with great hors d'oeuvres and things to get you into the season. And then if you want to do more traditional, and you know me, I love history.
Sure you
down
do.
To the, oh, you want to go down to the Sappington House.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
got a gingerbread display,
oh.
and come out and see me next Saturday at Whitehaven, because I'm going to be doing an evolution of gingerbread.
Oh, my goodness.
Where gingerbread began, and I'm going to have varieties of different kinds of gingerbreads and cakes and men and tell the story.
What
and,
about gingerbread you know, houses?
Well, that's part of it. My goodness. Gingerbread houses have been around for a couple of hundred years, and some of them have actually survived just because of the spices that are involved. They, mm-hmm. mice and some of the bugs don't like to eat those spices. So that's a deterrent. But
that's funny. So that's next Saturday.
Next Saturday.
Whitehaven at Grant's Farm.
Whitehaven at Grant's Farm. And
what time are you going to be there?
Oh, I'll be there from 10 until 4.
Mm-hmm.
Stirring up and cooking and talking to people and getting you into the ho, 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 holiday spirit.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. And I hope the weather is good. So far, it's been pretty good for us. And what about other things that you're going to be doing over the holidays? Any other events?
Well, I'll be at the Campbell House next Thursday because it is their house tour, which will include the Demonil House and the Eugene Field House.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful event. Starts at 3 o'clock. Tickets are $30, I believe. And you go to each house, and every house will have entertainment, great refreshments, beautifully decorated for the holidays. And, of course, I'll be in the kitchen cooking again.
Now, at the Campbell House, and you also have a book that you did for the Campbell House. What is that?
Yeah, well, that is The Gilded Table. And that's still on sale at the Campbell House and online. And it takes a look at all the wonderful food from the Gilded Age that are recipes based on the handwritten collection of Virginia Campbell. And the Campbells and that particular era in time, people love to entertain lavishly if they could. And if you want to see how to set a table, come to the Campbell House and I'll tell you all about it.
Okay. Now, there are people who will say, oh, that sounds great, but where is it? There are people who don't know and have never been.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the Campbell House is downtown. It is at the corner of 15th and Locust. Yes.
Yeah, southwest and, corner of 15th and Locust, right across from the Terracotta, used to be the General American Life Insurance Building.
That's right. That is right. It's easy to get to, great parking. And the Field House is downtown, very a stone's throw away from Bush Stadium. and they have a parking lot and great exhibits as well. So if you want to get into a little bit more of a holiday spirit with a historical twist, you want to do that. And don't forget the Garden Glow and going into Tower Grove House there, because that's another historical house within the garden, which is part of the Garden Glow.
Right. That's a beautiful place.
It is gorgeous. And I think a lot of people get so involved with walking through the lights that they forget that they can go into the house. And that has beautiful exhibits as well, all decorated for the holidays with all the florals and, oh, just wonderful. The Della Robbia.
Suzanne, once again, when is that tour with the three houses? When is that?
That is next Thursday. And that is, if I can get my calendar up here, that is, I want to say that it is the 5th.
Okay.
I believe that is the 5th.
So that's an all-day event?
That is from 3 until 8.
Okay, that's great. These are, and you can see all three places, the Demonil as well. So what are you going to be fixing as your part of this event?
At the Campbell House, I believe I'm going to be doing a collection of cookies that are from the Gilded Table collection.
Oh, good.
So things like shortbread and the coconut macarons. Mm. And I probably will be steaming a pudding just because it's such a classic and it makes the house smell so good as soon as you open that door.
Sure. What about pineapple upside down cakes? Do people still make those? I haven't seen one for a long time.
Well, you haven't been at my house.
I knew it. I just
made one not that long ago. I just made one. In fact, my house doesn't smell like pineapple right now, but I did a cranberry pecan pie, which is sort of like a combination of sweet and tart, and it goes over pretty big.
Now, do you conduct, sure, do you have classes that you do for people to say, yeah, I like to bake a pie, but I don't know how?
Well, every now and then I do classes. I've been doing classes at Kitchen Conservatory, a few classes at the Missouri Botanical Gardens, which I just finished a harvest dinner class, which come spring I'm going to be doing a Route 66 class right up your alley.
You're not kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Well, we're going to talk more about that, but we can't anymore because our time is out. It's done, and the turkey is ready, almost ready.
Almost ready. I got to go down and baste it.
Okay. Thank you, Suzanne Corbett.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you as well.
For you.
Thank you. Well, okay. Thank you. That's very nice. So we're talking turkey and a lot of food, and she knows her food. I'll tell you that. So if you ever get a chance to see her at one of these events, please do, because you will learn a lot and you will get something good. Now we're going to go down to the riverfront in a few minutes with Tom Dunn, kind of the story of the Admiral. That's, of course, if you were around in those days, something to be thankful for. You're listening to KMOX. Happiness and cheer for sure for Christmas time and, of course, for Thanksgiving time, Thanksgiving Day today. This is Johnny Rabbit and some more of our places to be thankful for in St. Louis. Winter Wonderland at Tillis Park. What a deal that is. It's beautiful. The Campbell House, as we mentioned it, the museum, the classic Continental building. It's worth a look all the time. You can't miss it right there at 3615 Olive at Grand, that huge tower that opened in 1929, has a dirigible dock on the top, which was never used. There's a beacon on it, though. Other places, the Hill, and the whole place is beautifully decorated. Norman Cape Probstein Golf Course and Forest Park is a wonder, and a drive-through or a walk-through, Bell Fountain and Calvary Cemeteries as well. Well, speaking of walking, I'm sure Tom Dunn has taken his friendly dog, his specially trained bulldog, Archie, out for a walk today. Did you go? You guys go for a walk, Tom?
We sure did. He, sorry to say, he really loves the cold weather more so than I do.
Yeah, that's terrible. I know. That's a shame. It is going to get cold. Well, I'm glad the dog likes it, and I'm glad you guys are inside where it's warm right now.
That's right. I think he's looking forward to some turkey scraps later on today.
Why not? Yes. Are you going to have turkey?
My nephew is kind enough to host our family at his place. It'll be about 10 of us there, and it would be a lot of fun.
Oh, good, good. That is, it's great to be with family and friends on a day like today or any day. With Tom Dunn, you were how many years on the river with Streckfus Steamers and so on?
I was down on the riverfront there with Streckfus Steamers and about 45 years.
Wow, that's a really long time.
Yes, it seems so, yes.
I mean, there's so much history there. Do you think there'd ever be another boat like the Admiral, another excursion boat, or is that something of the past and can't be done again?
Excursion boat, possibly, but never to the size of the Admiral. I mean, it was the largest sidewheel steamer ever built, and she carried 4,000-plus passengers every weekend and evenings. And there's nobody's going to be designing a boat like that any longer.
Right. And this is the biggest boat ever anywhere.
It really was. It was really a unique thing to St. Louis, and it became a landmark. You ever look at the pictures of the riverfront from 1940 on, there's always the Admiral right there in the forefront.
And you were there. And what was your job?
I was director of sales, and I was for quite a few years. And then later on, we also had the Tom Sawyer, Becky Thatcher, and Huck Finn excursion boats as well.
What about music? I mean, we're going to talk with you about music at the History Museum this coming Tuesday the 3rd for our Music of St. Louis program. You're going to be on to talk about a bit about the music on the riverboats.
Right. Strecker Steamers, the family that operated and built the Admiral, the company started back in 1891, and John Strecker had four sons, and they all operated riverboats all up and down the Mississippi. And what they featured on their boats, which was really unique, was some of the best musicians and bands that existed at that time, especially in the teens. With Louis Armstrong was a regular band member, plus Pops Foster and Baby Dodds, and we all went on to greater things as they went on to Chicago and other jazz locations. But music has always been a major part of the Streckfest boats. And even in the recent years, we always had a 14-piece band in the evening and a 10-piece band during the day. Mm-hmm. We had Johnny Paulson during the day, and everybody remembers Bob Cuban at night. And the dance floor was huge. You could have well over 2,000 people dancing. It was 12,000 square feet, so it was quite a location and really unique to St. Louis.
Now, people, there are. When did the Admiral go away? When was the end of the Admiral, as far as an excursion boat?
The last cruise was in October of 1978, which is already 46 years ago. Oh, it's hard to believe that.
It is hard to believe.
And then you talk to some young people, and sorry to say, they never experienced the Admiral, which in St. Louis, everybody went on the boat at least once or twice a season.
Yeah. When he means everybody, he means everybody. But let's just play like, all right, there's a person that doesn't even know what you're talking about. What happened when you came on the boat? Take us deck by deck. What did you see?
Well, let's take a night cruise, for example. The line to get on the boat would go all the way up the block. It's unbelievable. And as you came on the first deck, there's an arcade with about 140 games, that's basically a lot of the young kids like that during the day. And then as you go up to the second deck, that was the ballroom, and which had this huge dance floor and the bandstand right in the center, which in this case would say Bob Cuban would be playing. And above that was a mezzanine where you could look down onto the dance floor. And above that was the kind of a restaurant, a cafeteria and so on, especially during the daytime, where we could serve as many as 600 people at tables. And back then, during the day, families could bring their own picnic lunch on board.
Oh,
so it was
sure.
really a family event.
So where did it go? The excursion boat didn't travel too far away. Went down to Jeff Barracks? Is that about it?
Right. The boat was too big to get under Eads Bridge. She would turn right there and go south and go down river and then play the Calliope upon departure and then make a turn around Jefferson Barracks and come back. And they'd always play the Calliope when they made the turn down there. Of course, all the people at the Altenheim and everybody on the bluffs down in Carondelet always came out on the bluffs to hear the music as the boat went by. So it was kind of a daily event and went, was there for years and years and years.
So I don't know this for a fact, but I've been told the calliope is really hard to play, a difficult instrument to play.
It's very difficult to play. If anybody's not familiar with what a calliope is, it's basically a steam piano in which there's about 32 whistles on it and a keyboard which had cables that went to the steam whistle. So to play a note on the keyboard, you'd have to push down real hard on the keys, which are these heavy brass keys.
Wow.
And the musicians said it was difficult because, first off, you could hear the calliope for miles and miles away. And so the piano player during the daytime was the one that went up on the roof and played the calliope during the trip. And he'd have to put cotton in his ears. And then if it's a windy day, the steam would blow back onto him and he'd be somewhat dampened by it all.
I bet.
So we had Joe Ray was a fantastic calliope player. He said it was really difficult to play and it wasn't much fun, but I will say that he was a perfectionist and he could really play that instrument. He was fantastic and, people went up and made recordings of him and so on, but, it was a loud piece of machinery, I tell you.
I bet it was. Well, thank you for bringing these memories back to us today. Look forward to seeing you on Tuesday at the Missouri History Museum to talk primarily about music on the riverboats. Tom Dunn is our guest, and have a great Thanksgiving dinner.
You too, Johnny. Take care.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of you for listening today to our Johnny Rabbit Thanksgiving Day special. Some other places to be thankful for that you could see, like just walking through the Washington University campus or going down to, as we mentioned, Jefferson Barracks, or, of course, the Gateway Arch and the Old Courthouse and all of the activities for the holidays at Keener Plaza. It's always fun at the holiday season in St. Louis. We do miss those Christmas windows and famous Scruggs and Stixo downtown. I'll see you here again Sunday morning at 8:50 on KMOX 1120.